Welcome to our Kitchen Table Talks, a podcast of the Public Engagement Initiative, Suffrage, Race, Power, Black Women Unerased.
Unerased, unerased, lift up Black women today. 100 years. Of pain, suffrage, and sorrow, yesterday, today, and tomorrow. It's time to honor those erased from her story. It's time to rise and take our place. In this moment, we won't be erased. Time to rise, time to rise, stand in our power today.
I'm Gwen McKinney, creator of the SRP Unerased Initiative. Our theme song, A Black Woman's Love Song, features Latasha Brown on vocals and Glenn Pearson on piano. On this episode, join our host, Washington and former publisher Denise Rolark Barnes, with voting rights activist Barbara Armwine and Dawn Boudwin for a chat inspired by this year's centennial of women's voting rights. But first, here's a Just Saying mashup featuring three political activists who provide their insights. Is there a generational divide among Black women voters?
I'm not sure that it's a generational divide. I think that every age group approaches challenges differently. But at the same time, I think that Black women want the same thing that Black people want, which is social and economic justice. And generationally, we go about it different ways.
Our families and communities are intergenerational, so I don't think there's a divide, but there is some variance. And I think that we show up for one another, we love on each other, right? But there's definitely a difference in life experiences.
There is an age divide, certainly, in the way that we access information and technology. But fundamentally, in terms of values and in terms of our commitment as Black women to our communities, I don't think there's as much of a divide as is often portrayed.
For me, it's just meeting people where they are, and I ask them to do the same thing for me. So I think when it's a two-way street, we learn so much about each other, and then we're able to interrogate the candidates and the platforms and the choices that we're making so we can make the best decisions.
I see conflict and frustration, especially among younger people, when elders try to convince them that work has to be done the way that it was done 10 years ago, or even last century, really. And I don't think that 20th century tactics work in a 21st century world, but I think there are lessons to be learned from what has been done over the last several decades or 100 years.
Younger people are just more impatient, and that's the nature of youth. Those of us who are older wanted justice, and we wanted it now too when we were 22, 23, 24. But having lived a while, you're like, not gonna come now. We have to keep struggling for it. When you look at the history of protest, younger people are gonna be the ones who are pushing it. And the job of the elders is to put them in context and to make sure that we're all moving toward the same goal.
And that's really important because what we're talking about and what people are attracted to is this prospect of an entire lifetime where someone can thrive. And those values are shared across ages.
And so I think the real fissure, if we're going to talk about a divide, is between Black and white women. Because white women often vote their race and not their gender. If they voted their gender, Hillary Clinton would be the president of the United States right now. This is an election where we have to work as hard as we can. We also have to be extraordinarily vigilant about the voting process. That if you want a better quality of life and a better America, you better vote.
We all have stories that we can weave together, and then we can talk about what's the next step forward, because we all want to see change. I'm Brittany Whaley, and I work with the Working Families Party, where I serve as a senior political strategist.
I'm Dr. Julianne Malvo, economist and author.
My name is Janae Lewis, and I am a candidate for the DC City Council at large.
Thank you, Julianne, Brittany, and Janae. I'm Denise Rollark Barnes, publisher of The Washington Informer. And now let's move to a conversation at our virtual kitchen table. I'm thrilled to be joined by Barbara Arnwine, founder of the Transformative Justice Coalition, and Don Boudwin, deputy director of the Alliance for Youth Action. Thank you, ladies, so much for joining me at the kitchen table. I'm going to start with a question about our Suffrage, Race, and Power Unerased project. Tell me, in your own words, as we look back at the past and towards a major election in November, how would you define unerased? Barbara?
Well, the reality is that African-American women and our contributions, which have been absolutely foundational to this nation, are often erased. And I'm not just talking about the past. I'm not talking about the stories of the tremendous thousands upon thousands of Black women who marched and fought for the 19th Amendment, but to find themselves so portrayed after the passage. And I would encourage people to read the letters of Anna Clemens to the National Women's Political Party, in which she wrote in 1920, 1921, about the devastation of the Black women's vote following the passage of the 19th Amendment. Few people know about her advocacy. Maggie Lena Walker, who ran for governor of Virginia back in 1921. I mean, it's just so much that's missing in our history. But I'm also talking about today. I get letters from people trying to lecture me on voter suppression when I was the person who in 2011 actually created the map of shame and put it out there. But now I get lectures from white men who are trying to tell me what I need to know about voter suppression. In many instances, what we're talking about is the theft of our treasures, the theft of our contributions, the theft of our intellectual capital, the theft of our activism. It's a real problem to this day.
Wow. Don, what's your perspective?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to follow up on that. Thank you, Barbara, for laying it out. I think all I can really say is that I completely co-sign with everything that Barbara just mentioned. And I think there's so much that this democracy owes Black women. Ooh. And we are constantly being erased, but somehow always being the moral compass for this country and really pushing on issues that benefit everyone. And I think there's also so much that we're owed from all the fights that we've seen, whether it be combating literacy tests or, like you said, going back to the suffragettes, how we were betrayed in that time. So I just think that there's so much erasure and lack of appreciation, even more so than erasure for what Black women bring to this democracy overall.
Both of you all are mobilizing on the ground despite all of this.
Yes.
And as we move forward, bringing new voters into the political system, and especially operating in Black and brown communities. And some people espouse that across racial divides, one thing younger voters share in common is their unreliability in casting a ballot. Don, can you give us a sense of whether this is a myth or reality?
The short answer is it's like everyone's favorite relationship status on Facebook. It's complicated. There are layers to that that we have to consider when we're talking about young people and them turning out. So I think one thing that we have to realize is that youth organizing and actually mobilizing young people is one of the least funded activities in the political sphere. So it's an expectation that young people turn out, but yet campaigns are often not investing in actually turning young people out. So then it becomes a vicious cycle and this narrative that, oh, young people don't turn out, but when it's actually there's no investment. Campaigns traditionally invest in every other demographic and thinking about all these ways to break down the electorate and trying to get more quote-unquote reliable voters out. But part of the way of getting folks to become reliable voters is investing in them early. So that's part of the work that we do at the Alliance, is actually creating political homes for young people. So we want to make sure that they have the information they need in order to get registered. You got to think about it. When young people are eligible to vote, they're 18. And this is in the midst of a lot of life changes. They're going to a new place generally if they're headed off to college or headed into a new lifestyle. And so they have a lot of things that are going on in their life, then also trying to figure out how to register to vote. Where do they go to vote? When do they vote? There's a level of voter education that has to happen, and we have to invest in that early. And that's what our groups do. And also connecting issues to voting. A lot of campaigns think if you do a digital campaign, that's all that you need in order to reach young people, like putting a couple ads on Facebook or having people to boost up a candidate on Instagram. They think that that's sufficient, which is actually not true. And I think that that's where the work of our network comes in. We work to register folks. We work to engage young people on the issues that they care about. And we also work to mobilize them and help them understand and get involved in this political process. So again, in short, it's complicated, and there's a lot of context that we need to take into consideration when we talk about that.
Well, one of the things you didn't talk about, and I'd like for you to weigh in on, what does family relationships do in helping young people to go down that path? And it's interesting because some even decide not to, despite what families do. But what is that household conversation? How does it impact young voters?
Oh, I think it's super important. I think about when I was growing up in North Carolina, every time there was an election, I would go with my parents to vote. So little 5-year-old Don, 4-year-old Don is always toting along, wanted to be there in the mix. So totally think that that creates a habit, and it also shows the importance of it. But I also think that for some young folks, what they've seen is that their parents and grandparents have participated in the system, but they also haven't seen the change that they want to see. So one of the big things that we know is that young people in particular want big, bold policy changes, whether that's addressing climate change or dealing with systemic racism. So I think it's hard right now because what candidates aren't doing is actually addressing the issues that young people care about and actually really diving into them and having bold policy changes. So there may be a disconnect, even if there's this habitual nature to knowing that it's important to vote because you've seen your parents or grandparents to do it, but they want a better life for both them and their parents and grandparents and then the next generation to come.
And Barbara, you've been at this for a while, and you've led an army to forge voter protection and vigilance against voter suppression. And your ranks have included young women organizers. Talk about how you've been successful in engaging them or in keeping them engaged in not only voting, but also protecting the right to vote.
It's interesting. It's been a real pleasure to work with young women who see themselves as Asada's generation. They see themselves as inheritors of a spirit of resistance, of inheritors of a need for Black women's voices, our unique voices, to be fully heard. And they see themselves as the new leaders who may or may not get the recognition that they deserve. And so it's an uphill battle for a lot of young women out here, because we're in a society that devalues Black women's leadership, period, across the board. You look at philanthropy, and we know that historically, philanthropy to this day does not invest in Black women-led organizations. We look at the DNC. We look across at the RNC. We look at Independence, Green Party. We look all across, and there's a failure to center Black women and to center our leadership. So our young women, they know this. It's not like they are unaware. They're quite aware. And they are determined oftentimes to fight against that tide. In fact, they see the ability to create a whole new wave and to ride that wave, to surf it in a different way towards a greater victory. And I think that our challenge is to be able as organizers, to be able as leaders, to be able as activists to power share. I think that's a real problem in the movement, period, is a unwillingness to power share with young leaders, to power share with women leaders, to power share with LGBTQIA leaders. I mean, we have these real problems in our movement, and it is imperative that changes. So everything I do, it is to embrace the young. It is to center their leadership. And until we do that, we're just not going to be able to fulfill anything that approximates justice in this world.
At the same time, though, we're observing and in some ways celebrating not only more women exercising their right to vote, but more women being successful at the polls.
Yes.
During this pandemic, we've seen Black women mayors all across the country that are really making some strides. We're seeing women in Congress. We're seeing younger women in Congress and in other positions. What difference do you think that's going to make in the response to young women, older women coming out to the polls? Do we support each other?
Well, I think that that's precisely what we're seeing. That is the effect of Asada's generation. That is the effect of women rising. Remember that before 2018, the United States was 104th in women's representation in the world globally. And after the 2018 election, the United States is now 75th in the world. That means there are 74 countries doing better than us when it comes to women's representation in political office. Doesn't that tell us everything about how critical it is to center women? And when you have progressive women out there providing leadership, it means everything to this country. It changes lives. It gives motivation to younger women to run for office. And what we're seeing in 2020 is the largest number of women running for office ever. And be very clear, that's across parties that we're seeing a very big uptick and upsurge in women's running. Now, the question always is, what's their politic? And will they bring a politic that will be favorable and productive for Black women and all women of color?
Don, what difference does it mean whether there's a woman candidate or not?
I think it's very important. I think it's always important for folks to see people that look like them, that have similar backgrounds to them, and care about the similar issues to them. I think in 2018, we saw this surge in women electeds, and it was because they were both younger and talking to the issues that we care about. So I think changing from this more of a monolithic, older, wider setup for electeds, especially at the federal level, has started to engage young people in a real way, and they see a path there, and they also know that there are folks that are actually fighting for the things that they care about and look like them and talk like them and meet them where they are. So I think it is very important and is helpful for engagement of young people.
Yeah, at this point in history, we've got four generations that are going to be voting or at voting age. And we're going to use the colloquial terms boomers, Gen Xers, millennials, and the new voters called Gen Zs.
That's right.
Can you both share tried and true tactics for building common ground across generations of Black women? Don, what do you think works to build that common ground?
Yeah, I think there's often a misconception that older Black women voters and younger Black women voters are that far apart. We're really not. We're always working to strive for this country to be in a better place. And so I think the issues are going to be a place that will unite us, because I think we will also find some places to just find common ground by just having conversations together and realize that we're really not that far apart and we care about a lot of the same things and we're multi-issue people in general. There's not one issue that is just our issue. And so I think it's both talking and also actually addressing the issues that we care about.
Barbara?
Yes, well, I think that there is no example in history or any politic internationally where you have not seen the success of intergenerational struggle, that there's nothing. There is no South Africa without intergenerational struggle. There's no Voting Rights Act of 1965 without a SNCC, without a young John Lewis on that bridge, without Diane Nash, and without all the amazing young leaders who were bold enough to step outside of the restrictions of a more moderate politic and to demand much more aggressive action and to confront injustice in a much more powerful way. The Children's Crusade actually preceded a lot of even that kind of activism. It was children who jumped out of school building windows and marched in the streets that gave so much motivation to the older generations. So intergenerational struggle is absolutely seminal. But I also want to say that one thing people forget is that since the 1980s, all polling data has confirmed one fact, and that is that the most progressive voter in the United States is young African-American voters. When we vote with a whole different set of values, a whole different set of concerns. They are much more progressive in the sense of caring about the social safety net, progressive care and advancement of all people, values for equality, values for human dignity. There's just a whole different set of values that young Black voters bring to the ballot box, and that's been consistent now since 1980. But at the same time, I think that's why we see so much voter suppression, is that the others are quite aware of this from their own polling data. And they know that if that block ever had the ability to influence across the board a coalitional politic, you would see all kinds of different electoral outcomes. So that's why I believe you see such an incredibly dense and ugly form of voter suppression in our country.
Yeah, I mean, I totally identify with what Barbara's saying on the voter suppression piece. I think that it was very evident for me in 2008. It was one of the first years that I really got involved and was doing political organizing on my campus at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. And at the time, we had a polling location on campus. We had same-day registration. We would get golf carts and register them, put them on the golf cart, and then take them to vote, then drop them off at class. We had all these little things that we would have set up just to make sure people were registered and able to vote. But shortly after, in 2010, when we saw all this young voter engagement, especially with some enthusiasm around President Obama, in 2010 in North Carolina, they passed the Monster Law, which basically got rid of all of these things. So shortening early vote. It also got rid of the polling location on our campus temporarily, all of these things. So I think that mobilization that we saw in 2008, where we saw the rates increase significantly, that it's clear that people then were like, oh, no, we don't like this. We're going to put up barriers to make this harder for folks. But again, our folks are on the ground fighting against these laws all the time.
I'm glad that you brought that up, because I think that's where we're going with this conversation. We are getting close to the end of our conversation here at the kitchen table. And my question, I want to go back to the original one, but take it differently. Both of you all are leaders in your own right with regards to engaging women, particularly and young voters, in the voting process. And as we look back over history, Barbara, you started off talking about women that have been unerased. And I'm wondering, what do we do, or is it even important to remember or to unerase the generation, the ones we're talking to right now and are leading the voting rights movement? How do we keep from unerasing their history going forward?
Thank you for that question, because it's so important for us to uplift our young leaders, to give them roles, to give them voice, because they're brilliant. For me, it's inspirational. I see Harriet every time I see them. I see Sojourner every time I see them. But I also see a new generation that's blazing and creating a whole new way forward that we may not have ever envisioned. But I am so proud of the power of Black women's leadership. So proud.
Phenomenal. And you see a Dionne Baldwin.
Oh, yes. All right.
Done.
Now.
Well, I'll let you have
again,
the last word.
Like, thanks, Denise. I feel like I got set up again going after Barbara on those. just like after the first question, I'm like, whew, she said it all. So
No, duh.
What I'll add to that is one thing that Barbara alluded to but didn't explicitly say is trust young people. And
yes.
Like that's the thing that I want to highlight. Young people know what they're doing. They deserve to have a seat at the table, and they will bring their seat if they need to. And so I think it is important to trust young people. they are trying to build a better place for all people through the work that they're doing, and specifically trust young Black women, because we are leading this country and we will definitely make it better. So thank you, Barbara and Denise, for your time.
No, thank you. Thank you, Barbara Einwine and Dawn Baldwin. Thank you for joining us at the kitchen table today. We're closing out this kitchen table talk with our culture pop segment. Take a listen to the powerful musical voice of Circa 95 with their composition, It's Bigger, performed by Ref, Patty Dukes, and Chanel G.
Let's do it. Circa 95. Free lunch.
It's bigger, it's bigger, it's bigger than us now. It's bigger, it's bigger, it's bigger than us now. It's bigger, it's bigger, it's bigger than us now. It's bigger, it's bigger, it's bigger than us now. Living for the moment, steady staying strong. Do it for the people, we got it going on. Got it going on, got it going on. Do it for the people, we got it going on.
I see the future, nobody could have warned us. The youth are misguided, misled. Every night on the news, a couple end up shot up dead. Could have been a lawyer, doctor, mathematician instead. Tired of being poor, got to stack my bread. Everybody dream of riches. I ain't washing no more dirty dishes. One go, one mic, killing it, oh so precise. Well, nobody shorties don't be giving up their life for the spotlight. Who gonna show them some that it's not right? It's not true, cause everybody don't like you. I'm gonna be to the Bronx where Brooklyn is the Spike Lee. The only kicks I rock check is Nike. My gold dock is on deck. My flow is so perfect. Show there's more to us than always represent. If you feel it, then you know you got some sense. Been caged in too long, now I'm kicking in the fence. I'm rolling up to your hood and pitching up a tech. What? Cause
it's bigger, it's bigger, it's bigger than us now. It's bigger, it's bigger, it's bigger than us now. It's bigger, it's bigger, it's bigger than us now. It's bigger, it's bigger, it's bigger than us now. Living for the moment, steady staying strong. Do it for the people, we got it going on. Got it going on, got it going on. Do it for the people, we got it going on.
Hey, yo, you sleeping on the way that we kicking it live. 9 to 5, it's a job to survive. Wise to their ways, and I'm hip to the game. Make my way through the lies and the rain. I get mines and maintain. See through the hype, pick my fruits when they ripe. In the dark, I see light, but we up for the night. But I don't need a breather, burning like a fever. Either you stand or you run. I ain't leaving till we done. The story just begun. Simple and plain, my spirit is flame like kids you can't tame. Or tell them to stop, cut the check and bet what you got. No regrets on the way to the top, cause I'm immune to gravity. Graduated from the Looney Bin Academy with a master's in insanity. Head of my class, pass, piffing on grass. You either first or you last when it comes to getting that cash.
It's bigger, it's bigger, it's bigger than us now. It's bigger, it's bigger, it's bigger than us now. It's bigger, it's bigger, it's bigger than us now. It's bigger, it's bigger, it's bigger than us now. Living for the moment, steady staying strong. Do it for the people, we got it going on. Got it going on, got it going on. Do it for the people, we got it going on.
This is our moment to tell our story. How we offered our gifts without glory. Through the pain and the fears, the trial and the tears. Despite the veil, we did not fail. Honor us, Black women. Honor us, Black women. Our story must be told, the wisdom we hold.
Thanks so much for listening to our Kitchen Table Talks, a podcast made possible by support from Craig Newmark Philanthropies, the Groundswell Fund, TD Charitable Foundation, and anonymous donors. Special thanks to vocalist Latasha Brown, pianist Glenn Pearson, producers Sonia Williams, Rosemary Neely, Tarek Ann Gross, Nicole Hayes, and Volubility Podcasting. I'm Gwen McKinney, creator of Suffrage, Race, Power, Black Women Unerased. I invite you to tune in to our next episode of our Kitchen Table Talks. And meanwhile, visit us online at srpunerased.com.